Welcome to the Shortwave Report. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. The Shortwave Report is a 30-minute review of news and opinion heard on the shortwave radio and the internet in Northern California. Listening to international broadcast at home is quite easy. You could use a shortwave radio with the schedule of English language broadcast, but it's simpler to use a computer or smartphone with an internet connection. To help you with this, I'll announce times, frequencies, and website addresses at the conclusion of each series of stories at the website for this show. That's outfarpress.com. You can listen to the past 5 shortwave reports, find advice for listening to shortwave at home. Please check out the website and tell a friend. In today's edition, you'll hear reports from France 24, Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, Radio Havana, Cuba, and NHK Japan. We will begin with France 24. I think press reviews are often the best way to see how unfolding events appear from a global perspective. So on the topic of the overthrow of Syrian leader Assad, we'll begin with reviews from Monday. There was a mixture of celebration from some countries and anger from others. There are 6 million Syrian asylum seekers and refugees worldwide, well over a million in Europe. Several countries immediately halted asylum hearings and prepared to send them back. Other press reviews covered Assad receiving asylum in Russia and Israel launching airstrikes and ground incursions in Syria. The Canadian press responded to Trump joking about Trudeau and proposing a 25% tariff on imports from there. Then some press reviews about South Korean President Yoon, who was nearly impeached for instituting martial law and proposing aggressive military actions into North Korea. Finally, a report on Israeli military airstrikes and ground maneuvers in Syria and the Golan Heights. France 24.
Leo, you've been taking a look at how that fall of the Assad regime is being reported upon.
I'll start with those who are more celebrating the news. This is Arab News, which is a paper owned by the Saudi government. Assad ousted is the headline. They have an article, Syria has a bright future without Assad. The writer says we're seeing beginnings of a new Middle East free from the external interventions that have long troubled the region. The article finishes by saying the future Syria will be friendly to all nations. Half of the Syrian population living abroad have gained valuable experience and hold high aspirations, positioning them to participate effectively in the country's reconstruction. Across to Israel next, of course, an opponent of the Assad regime. Haaretz make the point that Israel should no longer fear Vladimir Putin. The main reason Israeli officials had stated for rejecting calls to more openly stand with Ukraine in the past was Russia's presence in Syria. Now, with Assad's fall and Russia's total retreat, that is completely irrelevant, they say. Let's look at the other side now. This is Tehran Times. Iran, of course, a country with close ties with Bashar al-Assad. They surmise that a failure to form an inclusive government in Syria will create a powder keg, the consequences of which will spill over into the entire region. I'll finish with Al Akbar, a Lebanese-based newspaper with close ties to Hezbollah, longtime backers of the Assad regime. They have the headline, "The New Syria is a Challenge to Unity." Inside the paper this morning, they say that the people of Lebanon must reflect what this means for their country. They say, over the past 76 years, tremendous change has taken place, but what has remained constant and strong is the American tyrant and its evil arm, Israel. The independence of Lebanon, as well as Syria, they say, will only come by confronting both countries.
Leo, we're going to go back to Syria to start with. Several newspapers there focusing on how this all affects Syrian refugees this morning.
Well, many European nations have been quick to halt asylum proceedings for Syrians. One of those countries is the UK. You can see that news making the front page of The Telegraph as well as the eye this morning. Between 2011 and 2021, more than 30,000 Syrians were granted asylum in the UK, with Syrians accounting for the fifth highest number of those claiming asylum. But now all those claims will be frozen, and it's not just the UK, it's Germany, France, Sweden as well, and Austria have actually said that they will start deportation process of refugees. Those decisions have been met by anger. This is Il Manifesto, which is an Italian communist newspaper. The headline, "It's your business." They say that the EU, that temporarily opened its borders in 2015, led by Germany, no longer exists. The desperate now must be discouraged by any means necessary, denounces the newspaper. In Germany, Die Zeit criticises the fact that the EU has begun discussing not only the suspension of asylum applications, but also the possibility of returning Syrian refugees just a few hours after the fall of Bashar al-Assad's regime. This reaction is not only shockingly narrow-minded, but also unrealistic, says the German Weekly, pointing out that Syria's future at the moment is still completely unknown.
We do know, that, of course, that Bashar al-Assad fled and was granted asylum in Russia. How are newspapers in the countries that allied with Assad reporting things?
Well, I'll start in Iran with the Tehran Times. Of course, Iran, a close ally of Bashar al-Assad. The headline, "Rebels Gift to Israel." They report that Israel are, in their words, abusing the fall of the Syrian government as they intensify air raids with attacks on about 100 targets on Monday. This piece says that Israel's aggression against Gaza, Lebanon and Syria is aimed at expanding its occupation, and Arab leaders should wake up to the fact that Israel and its main supporter, the United States, are just wolves in sheep's clothing. Let's go to Russia next, where, of course, Bashar al-Assad is currently taking refuge. The headline in the Moscow Times tells us that Russia has taken a political, military and economic hit with the fall of Assad. According to one expert, Russia's inability or decision to not reinforce Assad's regime during the insurgents' rapid offensive in Syria will hurt Russia's credibility as a reliable and effective security partner. There's also two key Russian military bases in Syria, and according to estimates, Russia's unsuccessful backing of Assad may have cost over $27 billion over 9 years. And talking about those military bases, The Guardian actually have this piece this morning reporting that Moscow is desperately trying to protect its military assets in Syria, and they've turned to diplomacy to do so. I'll show you a map that The Guardian have this morning of those two bases. You can see them on the Mediterranean coast. They're key to supporting Russia's maritime operations in the region. And in the last 24 hours, Moscow and its state-controlled media have been notable in how they've softened their rhetoric towards the Islamist group HDS. The two leading Russian news agencies have transitioned from labelling the group as terrorists to describing them as armed opponents.
And let's go to Canada next, where US President-elect Donald Trump has ruffled some feathers by calling a Canadian Prime Minister, Justin Trudeau, governor of the great state of Canada. How has this gone down in hockey country, Leo?
Yeah, well, Trump made that tongue-in-cheek comment on his Truth Social account last night. And the National Post, which is one of the country's papers of record, have responded with this front page. It sounds like we're living in an episode of South Park. That's a direct quote from Immigration Minister Mark Miller. Canadians, of course, were the bad guys in the South Park movies. Look, members of the ruling Liberal Party have been quick to downplay these comments, several ministers stressing that Trump was, of course, joking. It comes after the president-elect also made a similar joke, calling Canada the potential 51st state. So they have taken those comments as a joke, but one thing they're taking very seriously is Trump's threats to impose tariffs on Canadian goods, as you can see also in the Post this morning. Canada is preparing retaliatory tariffs, even threatening to cut off energy to the US. Trump said he'd impose tariffs on both Canada and Mexico unless both countries stop the flow of immigrants and illegal drugs coming into the US. In response, Ontario Premier Doug Ford, who you can see there, has threatened to withhold the province's energy, which it exports to five states in the US.
And Leo, you start in Korea, where President Yoon Suk-yeol has defended his declaration of martial law. How have the papers been covering this?
You can see the headline in the Korea Herald, which is the country's most read English language newspaper. President Yoon Suk-yeol refusing to step down and even defending his declaration of martial law. He's called the opposition's attempts to impeach him unconstitutional. The bad news for him, though, as you can see in the Korea Times, is that it's not only the opposition who now support that impeachment. Following Yoon's comments, the leader of the ruling PPP party, Han Dong-hoon, announced his decision to back that impeachment, while also calling for an ethics committee to discuss whether to ask Yoon to leave the party altogether. The comments mark a change in the stance for the party. They'd earlier said that they would push for an orderly resignation. That first impeachment vote last weekend fell short by just a few votes, and the main opposition, Democratic Party of Korea, is set to file a new motion to impeach Yoon later on today. I'll finish with Hankyore, which is one of the country's leading newspapers, a more left-leaning paper, have published this editorial this morning. They say that a man suspected of trying to incite limited war simply cannot remain commander-in-chief. They report that they're mounting suspicions that he was trying to incite skirmishes with North Korea to justify that martial law. Following the insurrection's failure, whistleblowers inside the military claim that former defense minister who orchestrated the martial law declaration had ordered a drone incursion of Pyongyang in October, just before that martial law declaration. This piece finishes by saying, given these revelations, South Koreans naturally feel very nervous about the fact that Yoon remains legally in charge of the country's military. He must be swiftly impeached to alleviate that anxiety, with those allegations thoroughly explored.
Israeli airstrikes on Syria intensified into Tuesday. Explosions heard throughout the night in Damascus, in the port of Latakia and Kamishli.
Last night, we were terrified. People came out of their homes to see what was happening. There were shells above our heads and shrapnel flying.
Although Israel has welcomed the fall of Bashar al-Assad, they say they are realistic about what the new regime will look like and, as such, aim to destroy any armaments within Syria's borders that could be used against them. Meanwhile, on the ground, Israeli tanks entered the Golan Heights buffer zone for the first time in 50 years on Monday. A 3-kilometre-wide demilitarised zone created under a 1974 ceasefire agreement after the Yom Kippur War. Israel then annexed the western part of the Golan Heights in 1981, a move recognised by only itself and the United States, and on which they are now doubling down in the face of international criticism. Reports are also circulating of Israeli tanks now in Syrian territory, well beyond the buffer zone approaching Damascus. The IDF denies these reports, but for the UN Special Envoy for Syria, Israel's so-called defensive measures have gone too far.
A very troubling development. We are continuing to see Israeli movements and bombardments into Syrian territory. This needs to stop.
Those press reviews and report were from France 24, which may be easily found at their website, france24.com, as well as a YouTube channel called France 24 English. They're also available at most podcast sites, as is the shortwave report. Next, Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle. Mohammed al-Bashar, former leader of al-Qaeda in Syria and religious governor of the Idlib province, has become the interim prime minister of Syria. Journalist Matthias Ebaum gives some background on the man and what some Syrians fear may be a move to Muslim fundamentalism. Then a report on Israeli airstrikes and IDF movements in Syria. Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle.
As Syrians continue to celebrate the fall of the Assad regime, the country now has a new interim prime minister. Mohammed al-Bashir previously governed a small rebel-controlled area in Syria's northwest. He takes over from the previous prime minister, who has been working with the rebels to coordinate the transfer of power since the fall of the government. Al-Bashir is tasked with forming a transitional government and says it's time for stability and calm. Let's bring in Matthias Abad. He's in the city of Hasaka in the northeast of Syria. Matthias, Mohammed al-Bashir has been appointed interim prime minister. Who is this man, and how have Syrians you've talked to been reacting to the news?
Yeah, this man was responsible for the administration of the Idlib governorate, where HTS was located before they marched to Damascus. And he was a man who was known for administrating it efficiently and in a professional way, so that this region could establish the structure is needed in order to topple Assad. Then he is now appointed, and he should strengthen the links between Idlib administrators, the cabinet, the ministers in Idlib region, and the new government in Damascus, in order to establish in Damascus a rule similar to that of HTS in Idlib. And yeah, I think many people expect from him stability and a good and stable transition, but not all of Syrians are happy or are really looking positively towards this new administration, which will last at least until 1st of March, because some of them see him as a religious, important religious figure and person in Idlib. He was responsible for religious affairs there, and therefore many people are a little bit frightened whether he might be a man who will establish a strong and fundamental Islamist rule. But so far, yeah, we do not have an idea what will be the real outcome of his administration.
Israel has launched a string of airstrikes against Syrian military bases. It says the attacks are necessary to prevent weapons falling into hostile hands after the collapse of the Assad regime. Israel also says it is setting up a weapons-free zone in southern Syria and is denying reports that its troops have moved beyond an established buffer zone and closer to the capital, Damascus. The G7 group of leading nations will meet to discuss the Syria crisis on Friday.
Smoke rising over the Syrian capital after the latest Israeli airstrikes. Dozens of them hit military targets across the country, according to Syrian media reports. They included airfields, ammunition depots, and a facility linked to the production of chemical weapons. Israel says it's acting to stop arms from getting into the hands of extremist forces.
We're taking all the actions necessary to try to ensure our security with regard to the new situation created in Syria.
On Tuesday, Reuters news agency and Israeli media published reports suggesting Israeli forces are also deepening their incursion into Syrian territory. Security sources say they were spotted just 25 kilometers from the Syrian capital, a claim denied by the Israeli army. That's after Israel took over a demilitarized buffer zone in the Golan Heights. The area southwest of Damascus was annexed by Israel 4 decades ago, but is still regarded by most countries as part of Syria. Israel says this step was necessary. Speaking at the Golan Heights on Sunday, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said the collapse of the Assad regime is offering great opportunity for peace, but is also fraught with dangers.
If we can establish neighborly relations and a peaceful relations with the new forces emerging in Syria, that's our desire. But if we do not, we'll do whatever it takes to defend the state of Israel and the border of Israel.
For now, the Israeli airstrikes continue. The UK-based Syrian Observatory for Human Rights says the most important military sites in Syria have already been destroyed in more than 300 Israeli strikes since the fall of the Assad regime.
That interview and report were from Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, which may be heard at a combined audio-video website, dw.com, as well as on YouTube at their channels called DW News and DW Documentary. They're also available at most podcast sites. On to Radio Havana, Cuba. Iran accuses the U.S. of playing a key role in the overthrow of Syria. Israeli troops have occupied several villages south of Damascus. Israeli President Netanyahu says he will not stop the war in Palestine despite ceasefire talks. Radio Havana, Cuba.
Iran's ambassador to Syria says that the U.S. illegal presence in Syria and its plundering of Syrian resources, along with sanctions it imposed on Damascus, played a key role in the latest developments in the country as terrorists captured the capital, Damascus. Undoubtedly, the Americans are playing a role in any part of the world, even though they claim to play no role. They have occupied Syria's most important economic areas and provide the basic needs of the peoples of the area, such as gas, oil, agriculture, and water resources, for more than 12 years. They have looted these resources and sold them through smuggling. Can any more blatant intervention be imagined? This, according to Hassan Akbari, a correspondent in Damascus. The U.S. military has for a long time stationed its forces and equipment illegally in northeastern Syria, and the Pentagon claims that the deployment is aimed at preventing the oil fields in the area from falling into the hands of Daesh terrorists. However, Damascus maintains that the deployment is meant to plunder the country's natural resources. Former U.S. President Donald Trump, during his first administration, admitted on several occasions that U.S. forces were in the Arab country of Syria for its oil wealth. The source blamed the U.S. presence in these areas for all of the problems of the Syrian people, including power cuts and the country's economic crisis. The U.S. claims non-intervention in complete contradiction with its actions. Kabari said that the United States has also sanctioned the Syrian government, provided the opponents of the government with weapons and equipment, which he described as real examples of interference. He warned that foreign meddling in Syria and the diversity of ideas and movements could trigger insecurity in the country. We hope that God will help the nation benefit from the blessing of security and overcome its problems. Syrian Prime Minister Mohammed Ghazi Jalia said that the government was ready to extend its hand to the opposition and hand over its functions to a traditional and transitional government. The Israeli military has occupied several villages south of Damascus, its tanks now being stationed almost 20 kilometers from the outskirts of the Syrian capital. A new report on Al-Mayadeen television network in Lebanon reported on Tuesday that the Israeli tanks have moved past the southwestern Syrian city of Kunaitra and have reached only 3 kilometers from Qatana near Damascus. Israel started the push to expand its occupation of Syria on Sunday after foreign-backed terrorists led by the HTS announced the fall of Syrian President Bashar al-Assad's government following a rapid 2-week offensive that led to the capture of Damascus. Israeli forces seized the buffer zone that separates the occupied Golan Heights from the rest of Syria in violation of a 1974 disengagement agreement between the Tel Aviv government and Syria. They also captured the strategic Mount Hermon in Golan, which provides high ground for the entire area. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said that the Syrian Golan Heights will remain a part of the occupied territories, in his words, for eternity. Israel's exploitation of the current chaotic situation to deploy its occupation forces in Syria has drawn condemnation from regional countries and all across the world. Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said he would not stop the war in Gaza now, despite reports of renewed efforts towards talks of a ceasefire. Speaking at a news conference in Jerusalem, Netanyahu said, "If we end the war now, Hamas will return, recover, rebuild, and attack us again." Last month, the International Criminal Court in The Hague issued arrest warrants for Netanyahu and former Defense Minister Yoav Gallant for war crimes and crimes against humanity in Gaza.
Those reports were from Radio Havana, Cuba. Cuba's website is working well at radiohc.cu, but there are no podcasts. On shortwave, Cuba may be heard from noon to 1 p.m. at 15140 and from 5 p.m. to 11 at either 6000, 6060, or 6100. At their website, radiohc.cu, you can stream the English version at noon, Monday through Friday, Pacific Standard Time. If you have questions or comments about the shortwave report, or could help support this program like listeners in New York City and Modesto, California did this week, there's a link for online donations available at my website, outfarpress.com, or you could write to Dan Roberts at P.O. Box 1162, Willits, California, 95490. Many, many thanks to everyone who has ever helped keep this freely distributed show airborne. Please join in the fun. And if you are listening on a public radio station, please, they need your support as well. We will conclude with NHK World Radio Japan. The Japanese group of atomic bomb survivors went to Oslo to receive their Nobel Peace Prize. NHK Japan.
A Japanese group of atomic bomb survivors on Tuesday accepted one of the world's top honors, the Nobel Peace Prize. The award recognizes their work trying to prevent the use of nuclear weapons. While Nihon Hidankyo's efforts endure, so does the threat.
We demand the immediate abolition of nuclear weapons as extremely inhumane weapons of mass killing, which must not be allowed to coexist with humanity.
The group sent 30 people to the awards ceremony in Oslo. Since its founding in 1956, it's advocated for more support for A-bomb victims known as hibakusha. Its members have also campaigned for a worldwide ban on nuclear weapons. They've traveled around the world to speak about their experiences. In his speech, the chair of the Norwegian Nobel Committee explained the reasoning behind their choice. He said in recent years, nuclear powers have upgraded their arsenals, calling it a new, unstable nuclear age.
Nihon Hidankyo and the hibakusha, the survivors of the atomic bomb attacks on Hiroshima and Nagasaki, have never wavered in their efforts to erect a worldwide moral and legal bulwark against the use of nuclear weapons.
Three of Nihon Hidankyo's co-chairs were there to receive the diploma and prize.
Let not humanity destroy itself with nuclear weapons. Let us work together for a human society in a world free of nuclear weapons and of wars.
That report was from NHK World Radio Japan. On shortwave, they're heard at 9 p.m. at 11735, or on the web at www.3.nhk.or.jp, as well as most podcast sites. All the times I announce are for Pacific Standard Time, so please adjust them to your time zone. One of my goals in producing this show is to encourage people like you to listen to international broadcasts, get a global perspective. You do have to look even harder these days because of U.S. and the EU prohibitions on media. Every Thursday evening, I post a new shortwave report at the website for this show. That's outfarpress.com. At my website, you can listen to past shows, find information for online donations. There's a link at my website along with the podcast link, and get advice for listening at home. The Shortwave Report, which is now in its 28th year of production, remains free to rebroadcast upon notification. For 27 years, the Shortwave Report has been produced and distributed off the electrical grid in Northern California using solar panels. I'm still recuperating from a spinal injury and staying in a house that's connected to the grid. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. Thanks for listening.